people, they were educated in the textbook and they want to see the real place. And also we see that in recent years, because of the economic and social development of the country, the national identity of the country is further strengthened among the younger generation. I don't know how to call it in English, 国潮.
Yeah, the kind of national brands. I mean, yeah, generally people are more nationalistic.
Because of the growing popularity of this trend, red tourism is also part of that.
看来我们真的靠自己了。地球错失了最后安全机会。这次公布不是庇护所。我觉得旁边的话或者哪辆几班女的都没有。Hi everyone, and welcome to Middle Earth, your source for insight into China cultural industry. Listen to those who are making a living by creating and distributing art or content onto the world's second biggest cultural market. I'm your host, Aladin Faré, and today is a special episode, as it will be a crossover episode with the Chinese Tourism Podcast. My co-host is William Ace Rawls. Nice to do this crossover episode with you, William.
Hi there, Aladin. Thanks for inviting me to do this crossover show. It should be great fun.
Could you briefly describe your show?
Sure. The Chinese Tourism Podcast is a travel industry podcast giving you all the insights, trends, and developments in Chinese tourism, brought to you by Dragon Trail International.
And so you said that you guys bring like the latest trends in Chinese tourism industry. Like, is there any latest trend that you would like to share?
Well, I think we're talking about one today with red tourism, and it's something that this summer with the 100-year anniversary that we've written a few articles and reports about. I think it's something that a lot of our listeners will find interesting. So typically on our show, we invite guests who have interesting things to say about how things in the tourism industry and how it connects with China, typically in an outbound capacity. But we also look at domestic tourism like we are looking at today.
Okay, great. Well, I hope our listeners here at the Middle Earth will flock your show as much as tourists are going to red tourism sites.
Good, yeah. You can get to our XSL podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, or also by our website, which is dragontrail.com.
So 100 years ago, in July of 1921, the China Communist Party was founded in the French concession of Shanghai. And today we're going to talk about this red tourism. Briefly, to explain, red tourism are places that are linked in the history of revolutionary struggle of the CCP between 1921 and 1949.
As we look at the numbers, red tourism sites are becoming more and more popular. According to information released by the Ministry of Culture and Tourism, from 2004 to 2019, red tourism in China went from 140 million to 1.15 billion visits. In 2020, the central government pledged to support red tourism attractions with an investment of 6 billion yuan, which is roughly $1 billion. Currently, there are 301 red tourism locations in China, including at least one in every province. And this year, with the 100-year anniversary of the party, the Ministry of Culture and Tourism introduced 100 excellent red tourism routes running throughout the country for ready-to-go tourists. To talk about this topic today, we have two great guests. The first is Michael Wang, VP of Content at Dragon Trail International, who is from Shanghai originally. He previously worked as the editor-in-chief of Lonely Planet China, Travel Weekly China, National Geographic China, Reader's Digest, and Shanghai Daily. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And our other guest today is Dr. Mimi Li.
Hi, Aladdin.
So you're from Taiyuan, and you work now as an associate professor at the School of Hotel and Tourism Management in the Hong Kong Polytechnic University, one of the best in the region, or one of the best in the world, according to some. You've been focusing your research on Chinese tourism behavior since you joined PolyU in 2007. We will define what is red tourism, how this industry is changing, or maybe not, and what lies ahead. And let me remind you that Middle Earth is produced by China Compass Production, your film production service in the Middle Kingdom. So if you need a location scouting for your next movie, for example, reach out to us. Also, Middle Earth is part of TWOC, the World of Chinese Podcast Network. The World of Chinese is a bi-monthly English magazine dedicated to Chinese language and culture. TWOC takes a modern theme and looks behind the headlines to uncover how contemporary issues affect Chinese society. And the latest issue, Call of the Wild, takes a look at the rising interest and risk in outdoor sports in China. And there are other fascinating stories about the country's struggles to create a world-class football team and the 5,000-year-old art of dyeing textile with blend. To learn more, go to theworldofchinese.com. Or check out the podcast description for direct access to insightful content about China. Could you first, the both of you, could you start sharing to the audience like when and where you started going to such historical places?
I don't have a very clear memory of my first visit to such site, but I think
for people of my generation, or even the younger generation, I'm sure for the older generation the same. We all have the experience of visiting this type of heritage sites when we were in primary school and middle school. So in most of the regions, in most of the provinces, such a visit is a compulsory part of our education. So I think if I remember correctly, my first visit is going to a certain type of monument in Taiyuan.
When I was in high school, I was born in Shanghai. So, you know, that the first convention held by CPC was in the French concession, former French concession in Shanghai. So that's my first time visit to so-called red tourism spots back to my when I was 19 or 18 years old.
But so then I'm kind of curious, like, does the Wuhan 1911 revolution tourism or the Nanjing Massacre Memorial or anything that could be related to reform and opening, like, do those kind of places, could they count as red tourism or not at all?
From academic point of view, I don't think the one in Nanjing could be classified as red tourism. It's more like a dark tourism site.
Got it. So red tourism is always related to the Chinese Communist Party, like to the revolutionary struggle.
Yes, according to the academic definition.
And so as we said in the introduction, like there are over 300 tourism sites all over China, like every single province have some of them. Could you guys share, like, where are those places usually concentrated?
Actually, it's scattered around the country. And, you know, there are mountains, museums, rivers and cities. So it's everywhere, basically speaking.
But are there like region where there are more sites like this than others?
I think for the spatial distribution of the red tourism attractions, we can look at the distribution from different angles. There are some very key sites that are related to the Chinese revolutionary history of, as Michael just mentioned, that some places in the meeting place in Shanghai, and the hometown of Chairman Mao, and like Yan'an or Jinggangshan, those are the key places that are related to the red tourism or the revolutionary history of the country. If we look at the, like, from a broad perspective, if we look at all the tourism attractions that can be called as red tourism attractions, actually the distribution pattern follows certain patterns in terms of number. North has the most, then south, and then the middle. And also we know that in the revolutionary history of the country, there are some very famous event, like how to say that in English, 平津战役, 淮海战役, like all those major battles. Around those major battles, there are also a lot of tourism attractions. So these are the spatial patterns of red tourism distribution.
So there are like places basically in every provinces. So I guess that gives a lot of choice to people.
Yes.
And now, Michael, you anticipated a little bit the next question, which is like, what can people actually do when they go there? As a tourist, when I go to those red tourism places, like, what can you do? What are the user experience? What are the activities that you can do?
I think that there are not a lot of things that we can, as a tourist, we can do at the museum. Basically, they are very educative. We just look to, you know, all the settings and, you know, listening to the guides and they're telling the stories. But some museums, they have very nice, vivid settings and, you know, some of them even play like a drama on stage. But, you know, as a tourist, you can do a lot of things over there. But just as I mentioned, if we go to some scenic spots like Jinggangshan, the mountain, Jinggangshan Mountain, or, you know, some caves in, not caves, Yaodou, I don't know how to translate this. Yaodou in Shaanxi Province, where Chairman Mao and the Premier Zhou, they lived and fought and worked in the 19, before the liberation of, before the liberation, founding of the, you know, the China, People's Republic of China. And we can experience their local, a little bit of their local life over there. We can stay at the local hotel. You know, some of them are made from the caves, and you know, wear dressed in the Red Armies. Even there are some battles battles are set up for them to experience the fighting scenes over there.
I agree with Michael's point that in many of the red tourism sites, what we can do as tourists is just to see the artifact and listen to the interpretation of the tour guide. But for the tourists, especially the younger generation, this format of visiting is a little bit boring. And I'm sorry to use the word, but it's really... Yeah, especially for primary school and middle school students, that after visiting those sites, they have to write a diary, you know, like describe what they have done and what they have learned from visiting such sites. So it's a little bit boring, but we do see some innovation in the tourism industry in the way of presenting tourism in the way of presenting in the red tourism sites. For example, some places, as Michael just mentioned, that provide like more interactive activities to provide more immersive experience, such as in some of the theme parks. I'm not sure if you know that. It's not the real red tourism sites, but it's more like man-made red tourism sites, like Fangte Amusement Park. They have some themed amusement park that show the history of mainland China, and then they use some immersive technology to showcase the history. I think that's another way of innovation.
I think tourists are very interested in visiting these sites because, you know, apart from, you know, listening and reading and seeing the shows or the settings, but we can participate in, you know, simulated, activities or interactive activities. For example, everyone can, sweat after morning of simulated attacks on a training field on a nearby mountain, something like that, right? It's exciting. Or we can try the red rice or pumpkin soup for lunch, which are, you know, which were typical Red Army dishes. I think that's very vivid experience. That reminds of us, you know, these guys back to, you know, 100 years ago. They are really living heroes. They now we can have a real sense of what their life was. So I think that part is great.
Yes, actually, this can be explained by a term in tourism study, the study of tourism experience, the embodied experience. Before, when we go to visit many places, not only the red tourism attractions, but many type of heritage sites, we only experience the site with our eyes and the ears, right? But now with more types of activities, with more interactive activities, we can experience the site not only with our eyes, ears, but also our body. So this will lead to a more memorable travel experiences.
Long March is so famous that, you know, but people, we as a child or students, we just read books of Long March stories. But when we go back to this, the sites, we can try weaving a straw into shoes and check the section of the Long March in the mountains. You know, we can carry the replica rifles and packs of explosives and pose. It's really something.
I'm going to jump in right now because, like, I have a friend, and it's really a friend, like, he could not come to the show due to schedule, unfortunately. But basically, this friend has been working for over 10 years in China in the news sector. So he worked both for Chinese national outlet and also for international media outlet. And recently went on like a four-day red tourism trip organized by the State Council of China, where they just brought along like really like a lot of foreign international journalists, like to show them like those red tourism sites. And for him, basically, the user experience was the same as what he saw like 10 years ago. So I'm hearing your stories, but I feel at the same time like there are a lot of sites that basically did not do any upgrades and the user experience is still like a bit dull.
Yeah, might be, especially those very famous places.
Ah, that's interesting. So basically the famous places, they maybe don't have such a need to do more interaction and more fun place, but the less famous, maybe they have to strive to bring more people in.
It's more like for interactive experiences, you need more time with less people. But for those very popular tourism sites, it's almost important to do it in a small group. So it's more like still like a mass tourism, not like small group tourism. Yeah. So imagine your trip to the Palace Museum in the peak season, right? You see people, mountain people see, and it's very hard for you to like really immerse yourself in the site. I think that's the popular sites suffer from the huge population.
Yeah, I queued 2 hours to go to Mao Zedong home house, and yeah, there was a long queuing for just seeing a few empty rooms.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's something that's an issue with all tourism destinations that become very popular. It's hard for them to make an individual experience. So moving on slightly, you know, we've talked obviously this year being the 100-year anniversary, and there's sort of been more focus on red tourism, and it's, you know, been booming in part due to the fact that international travel has not happened this year, and interestingly, more than ever, there's been a younger audience. To give some numbers, during the first week of May, on that May weekend, the numbers of tourists born after 1995 that went to red tourism sites went up to 50%. Why do you think this is? Why is it so important that more young people are actually visiting these sites? How has this come to be?
On one side, China has stepped up efforts to promote red tourism, you know, which features visit to sites with significance of revolutionary history, especially among young people, because that's kind of educative. But on the other side, I think young people, they're really eager to look back to that period of history, to see what really happened, and to experience the history. You know, the promotions are everywhere, including the I don't want to say the word propaganda, but you know, they are everywhere. The TV shows, the entertaining, things, activities. So we are creating a great atmosphere for the young people, and you know, and we have so perfect transport facilities, right? We have high speed links. I mean that if they want to go, they can go over the weekend.
But it's also a bit harder now to go spend your weekend in Thailand or Vietnam, as all the borders are closed, right?
Yeah, the closure of international tourism has definitely helped. I imagine it's all domestic tourism has boomed, and you know, red tourism with the 100-year anniversary is kind of the avenue that has been taken. On an academic level, Mimi, is there sort of any thoughts why the young people have, you know, really been the proponents of this boom of red tourism?
We haven't done any research on the Z generation's travel behavior to the red tourism sites, and I haven't seen any of this research. But actually, based on my observations and also my conversation with my colleagues in mainland China, I think for the younger generation, we can see like two groups of students or two groups of young people who are visiting the red tourism sites. And this is actually consistent with how we define heritage tourists. We define heritage tourists or any other type of tourist, like for example, food tourist or music tourist, whatever, based on their real interest. Some of them just go there because it's famous, or other people go there, or it's a must see in the destination. But there are also some other group of people, they go to the destination because they're really interested in the history or in the culture of the place. So the observation is that among the younger generation, we actually see a growing number of young people who are really interested in the history and the culture of the revolutionary sites. So I think this partially contribute to the development of red tourism in terms of tourist arrivals. But of course, the majority are still the people who just go there for some other reasons out of their, you know, their real interest in the place. I think Michael's observations are, I agree with Michael's observation that people, they were educated in the textbook and they want to see the real place, or also the social media actually plays a huge role in guiding the younger generation's behavior. And also we see that in recent years, because of the economic and social development of the country, the national identity of the country is further strengthened among the younger generation. So That's why you can see I don't know how to call it in English, 国潮.
Yeah, the kind of national brands. I mean, yeah, generally people are more nationalistic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So because of the growing popularity of this trend that people are seeking for something Chinese, and red tourism is also part of that.
Yeah, I mean, for the listeners that don't know, sort of Guochao is sort of supporting brands like Li Ning, the Chinese brands doing well in fashion, that they've gone bigger in recent years. And I guess that was one of my curious questions, is whether it was sort of the national pride and nationalism that is also helping that in the young generation.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
It's interesting to hear. As you said, many of the scenic areas are quite rural. Is the development of rural tourism also in part linked to the government poverty alleviation policy? I mean, are these areas that are next to the tourism sites, I imagine they are, you know, getting benefits from all these recent tourists?
I think the tourism destinations in the countryside or in the rural area in relatively underdeveloped provinces will definitely benefit from tourism, not only economically but also socially. Same as many other underdeveloped area, those places suffered not only from economic underprivilege, but also many of the young people, they go to big cities to look for employment opportunities. So leaving those places with only old people and children. As we know that tourism is a labor intensive industry, and if we develop tourism in those places, we will definitely need to have more manpower, more human resources, and those young people will come back to hopefully come back to their hometown for the development of tourism. Then that will also solve some social problems left, such as the leftover children.
Are all the red tourism sites? I mean, I imagine most are sort of government funded sites, but are any of them done by private companies? Is there any sort of sites that have been built up, maybe not original traditional sort of sites, but more new developed red tourism sites that have been backed by any private companies? Are you aware of anything like that?
I'm not sure if the company is private company, but I know that Fangte, as I just mentioned, Fangte Group, they actually built a lot of attractions that are with the red theme. And also Wanda, they also launched some projects in red tourism.
Just if I remember, Michael, during our pre-interview, like, you were telling me that what makes like red tourism sites, let's say, successful, it's because those places are actually located in an area with other activities. You're not going to spend a full weekend diving into history. Like, you also want to have a break out of it. You will have like maybe one day history, but then the next day you also want to have nature or animal or food.
Yeah. Oh, very interesting question. Yes. Just over the weekend, you know, I paid a visit to Xintiandi. It's a very, you know, fashion area, and also it's the place where the first meeting of CPC was held back to 100 years ago. When I took the subway, you know, they just changed the name of Xintiandi, of this station, subway station, to Yidahuizhi Xintiandi. Yidahuizhi means the former meeting place of the first meeting of CPC. So now people go there, go to the Xintiandi, and say, oh, we are going to Yidahuizhi. That's very smart move for the local government to remind locals or the visitors to Shanghai, to remind them of this place. So I think it's very very unique combination of fashion and revolution and history. So people usually go to Xintiandi to drink, to meet people, to, you know, there are a lot of fancy shops over there. But now there are shuttle bus connecting the red, the red tourism spots. That's a very smart move for the local government. And I think in rural areas, they are different places, they just spare no efforts to take advantage of their own geographic or historical or everything.
So basically, like, for a local government to have like a red tourism site, it's basically a gift from heaven. You can capitalize on it, and you can bring people in, and they can discover the rest of the area as well.
You can say that. Yes.
And you mentioned obviously there's quite a lot of development there, and you know, being more interesting sites as for younger audience. Have you seen anything sort of in using any form of sort of VR or anything a little bit more advanced tech-wise to some of these red tourism sites? I know from previous travels, places like Donghuang Grotto in Gansu, they've, you know, got things like an AR experience, etc. Is there anything like that in any of the red tourism sites that you've seen, or is there any sort of plans for that you know of?
They're starting to adopt the VR and AR, you know, the technologies. The purpose is so clear that they want people to get immersed in, you know, in feelings of these places. Even in the ice cream shop, they do ice creams in the shape of a torch. You know, torch resembles the red revolutionary things, right? So I don't think back to 1950s or 1960s that people can do ice cream resembling a torch. Right. So I mean that it's serious. Yes, we respect the history. We want to listen to the stories. But on the other side, we want to
engage younger people.
In a more interactive and the way that can make young people feel more interested in this.
I think in Xi'an, I also saw something like you can buy ice cream with terracotta warrior.
Terracotta, yes,
it's everywhere. Choose your ice cream.
Yes, yeah. Actually, in addition to what Michael has just mentioned, the way of repackaging the red tourism product, I think we also seeing a more combination of red tourism destinations or attractions with other type of destination and attractions. For example, ecotourism. Right. Yes. And actually, when red tourism was first brought up to the market was 1990s by Jiangxi province, where the Jinggangshan located. So even for Jinggangshan, which is like the famous red tourism attractions, they actually need to work with other to combine with other type of tourism product to develop. So at that time, the slogan they used was red tourism plus green tourism. So the selling point was the red side as well as the nature environment of the province. So this is actually not anything new, that we try to present a broad spectrum of activities and attractions to the tourists, especially for the long haul travelers. If for the short haul, because they only have very limited time, the combination focus more on the six elements of tourism, like six elements of tourism, the food, the accommodation, the transportation, the attraction, souvenir, and entertainment. That's for the short haul tourists. But for long haul travelers, in addition to this, we need to also provide more variety of tourism products. I think this is because of the changing dynamic of the market. So before we, especially for red tourism sites, many of the tourists are in travel group. So they go in a group and they get on the bus and they get on the bus to sleep and they get off the bus to take some photo. That's it. So you don't need to do anything else. But now we see more independent tourists. And another reason is that people nowadays are getting less and less focused. So we need to provide frequent stimulus to the tourists. Otherwise, they will easily get bored. That's why, only presenting the exhibition is not enough. We have to combine them with other type of tourists and other type of product. And we also need to use the technologies such as AR, VR, or gamification to make it more fun.
Yes, it seems to capture everyone's attention. We've got to constantly be pleasing them in different ways. It sounds like red tourism's not staying away from making it more approachable to different people. And obviously, the numbers show this year with the amount of people going to visit. Moving away slightly from red tourism in China, I noticed that also places in Eastern Europe and Russia have also had Chinese tourists visit places which have communism heritage to them. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and how that's developed in recent years?
My understanding is that, yes, some tourism bureaus, they are developing itineraries, especially for the CPC members in China. What I know is that last year or the year before last, the Germany Tourism Bureau, they're developing a route to pay respect, to pay a visit to the Karl Marx tombs, tomb sweeping to Karl Marx. You know, Karl Marx is a very important figure to the CPC members in China, right? So this itinerary is very popular among the Chinese tourists. And they went there, they pay respect, and they even, you know, repeat their oath to join the CPC again in front of the tomb. So I think that's a very unique experience. And it happened, especially in Russia, in the Eastern European countries. So I think some travel agencies or DMOs, they are cashing in on this to invite or to encourage or promote their, you know, this kind of resources to attract Chinese visitors.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned, Karl Marx birthplace, I think that's in Germany, in Trier. I mean, I know that has, you know, upwards of 150,000 Chinese tourists going there yearly. I think that's one of their biggest market pools. So it's obviously an opportunity for certain destinations to take advantage of that. And as you mentioned, with Russia, with Lenin as well, I'm sure a lot of Chinese tourists find parts of those places very interesting.
I also remember, like, 2 years ago during the, I think it was the 150th anniversary of Karl Marx's death or birth. I forgot. And anyway, there was this French-German movie that came out called The Young Karl Marx. And that was like one of the few French movie that could go into China, into like those market slots, because not every foreign movie can go into China. You have to go through like a rigorous process, and only a few of them can get in. But because it was like Karl Marx, then it was like up and running onto Chinese cinema screen. Yeah, I guess it's a good market with over 96 million potential customers.
Do you think, obviously, going abroad to visit some of these red tourism sites, traditionally, you're looking at the data, it's kind of older tourists, you know, going over to Russia or to Germany or other parts of Eastern Europe. Do you think that in the future that young travelers might be inspired to travel to such destinations? Obviously, if red tourism is picking up between the Generation Z, whether they would also want to make trips abroad to see red tourism sites?
I think once the outbound tourism resumes, the Chinese outbound tourists will definitely visit those sites, because I'm not saying that all of them will go, but there must be some percentage of outbound travelers visit those places to seek novelty and also for education and knowledge.
But do you think there would be similarly, you know, some of these younger people, or do you think it would, because I know traditionally it's been older group tourists that have gone. I just wondered whether with this recent boom in interest in red tourism, whether that might change at all.
Well, I don't see any research on this, so I cannot make such an estimation for sure, but I think that in the future we will see more and more younger people to visit those sites, with their interest in the Chinese culture, in the Chinese part of the culture, and then after they know the Chinese part of the culture, they may have more motivation to visit the similar sites in other country.
I think that younger generation in China, I see a market stimulus to them to visit this kind of red tourism sites in the West. We are talking about the Karl Marx Lenin, and it reminds me of the movie Enemy at the Gate. It's about how the Soviet Union soldiers they defend the German invaders in 1942 in St. Petersburg. It's very popular among Chinese young people. I mean, it's a great artwork, and also it reflects a lot of aspects of the history. And when people went to visit a place, I don't think they just interested in the food, drinks, the art. They also interested in the history, the people, because they are the living memories. they are the indispensable part of a trip. If the travel agencies or companies, they can develop some routes, relevant routes, and including or packaging, everything, just like I mentioned, the Xintiandi and Yidahuizhi, you know, the packaging, the history and fashion, and maybe it will have a very, appealing the outcome.
Michael's points remind me of the articles that I read. In some of the research, the authors mentioned that because of the communist part is history. So in many of those countries, they are trying to weaken that part. So I think if the package is organized by the receiving countries, then we will not see too many promotions on those sites. But because we know many of the tourists, they visit with the local, a Chinese local travel agent or travel operators, then there might be more and more this type of itinerary embedded in the whole trip.
Yeah, no, I think that's a point you make. Obviously, with certain countries that previously were communists that now aren't in Eastern Europe, their heritage of communist sites maybe aren't something that they, you know, particularly push. So it kind of goes up against a different direction of what Chinese tourists actually might want to see.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they downplay the history of the socialist period, because they want to construct a new national identity. So from the destination's perspective, they may not wish to promote the communist heritage tourism, but on the organizer's part or the Chinese part, there might be some tourism operators who see the value of these attractions and organize some tours.
I totally agree with Mimi's viewpoints, because from my perspective, red tourism is not totally all about the politics. Let me tell you an example. In Shanghai, there is a museum called Poster Museum, which is very popular among the foreign travelers to Shanghai. Actually, the Poster Museum, they are displaying the posters designed in the 1950s or 60s.
But that museum is kind of underground. It's actually really underground. It's like in the cave of a building apartment.
It's in the basement, but it's open to public.
It seems in a gray area. I mean, I'm not sure how much the local government is backing them up.
Yeah. I think Shanghai government is very open-minded, and it allows the museum to do its business. And I visited this museum twice, and each time they are full of not only the foreign travelers, but also the locals. If we want to promote a place, we want to get values from both sides, from the operators, and both good for operators and for tourists at the same time. We don't have to say, you are from a socialist country, we are from... that doesn't matter, I mean, in the tourism industry. So we want to get engaged, get to know more about each other, especially the culture part.
Okay, well, now we'll move on to the last part of the show, my favorite, the quiz. So I know, William, this is something new for you, but we'll ask you guys a few questions. If you know the answer, you buzz in with your name. So Michael, you will say...
Michael.
Mimi, you will say...
Yeah, Mimi's.
Okay, great. And the winner of the quiz will win the latest issue of The World of Chinese, Call of the Wild. First question. According to the Tianjin Institute, there are over 300 red tourism areas in China. But can you tell me in which province or municipality or autonomous region got the most of those?
Michael.
Yes, Michael?
Jiangxi province.
Okay, it is not the answer. Mimi?
Yeah, Beijing.
Yes, Mimi, you win this. It is Beijing because it has like 15 red tourism area. And then it is followed by Henan, Hebei, and Hunan. And those three ones have 14. And then it goes down the list. And you have like small areas like Gansu. They only have like three or four of those.
Okay, question two. This is a guess the number question. In which year was the phrase red tourism coined?
Mimi. 1996.
Yes, it
correct.
Is.
Correct. Well done.
Okay, I think we all know where this is going, but maybe, Michael, you can lose with some style. Third and last question. What is the red tourism area that is the most visited in China?
Chairman Mao Memorial Hall.
It is actually Tiananmen Square. So congratulations, Mimi, you win. Well, on that note, we'll wrap up the show. So thank you guys for your time.
Thank you.
And thank you, William, for co-hosting.
No problem. It's been great fun. I hope those that have listened maybe can look out for our podcast, the Chinese Tourism Podcast, which is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the dragontrail.com website. We hope you can join us soon.
Let me remind you that Middle Earth is part of TWC, the World of Chinese Podcast Network. If you want to know more behind the headlines, go to theworldofchinese.com and order your latest copy. Today's episode was produced and edited by Aladdin Faré,
co-hosted by William Ace Rolls,
research by Jadra Nurpis,
music by Sean Calvo,
and distributed by the World of Chinese Podcast Network. I guess you already all have a podcast app, but if you don't want to miss the coming show or listen to the old ones, you can subscribe to our feed. And if you like the show, please consider sharing it with a friend. Always help with the algorithm to get more subscribers and more ego. Hope to see you next time and stay safe. Bye-bye.